Tonight is Wednesday night, March 6th. This is the Women's Mishnah Gemara Shir. We're doing topics in Masechah Sukkah, beginning a new topic tonight, Baal Tosef.
Okay, Rabotai. I'd like to begin a new topic tonight. And the name of the topic is Baal Tosef and Baal Tigra. Not to add onto any of the mitzvot that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has legislated, nor not to eliminate a mitzvah. So I'm going to show you the two psukim in the Torah that formulate this particular two prohibitions, basically, you know, two sides of the same coin, and then ask you to fall into my trap as I ask you to define it, and then show you a shocking Rashi in two places, and then we'll explore and expand. So if you take a look at page 1, the first source is in Parshat Vo'et Chanan, where the Torah writes, in Pasuk Aleph, Va'ata Yisrael, Shma el hachukim ve'el hamishpatim, asher anochim ulamed etchem la'asot. Moshe tells Am Yisrael, listen to my statutes and mishpatim, which I am teaching you in order to observe. Leman tichyu ubatem v'rishtem et haaretz, so that you will survive and be privileged to come and inherit the land. Asher Hashem Elokei Avotechem noten lachem. Lo tosifu al hadavar asher anochi mitzav etchem. Don't add unto anything that I command you. Velo tigru mimenu. Don't detract. Don't diminish. Lishmor et mitzvot Hashem Elokeichem, asher anochi mitzave etchem. Don't add. Don't detract. Then a second source appears in Parshat Re'eh, a couple of chapters later in Sefer Dvarim, almost verbatim. Eit kol, page 2, Eit kol hadavar asher anochi mitzave etchem, anything that I instruct you, command you to do, oto tishmeru la'asot. That's exactly what you should guard to observe. Lo tosef alav, the lo tigra mimenu. Don't add on to it, and do not subtract anything from it. So on two occasions, the Torah tells us not to engage in hosafa or tigra, to add or subtract. So ladies, give me your definition of how one violates the law of Baal Tosef. Tell me how you violate the law of Baal Tosef, simply based on the way I read the text. How do you violate, and you would not be wrong in making your mistake, but how would you now interpret this? Give me a definition. Your kid asks you, Mom, how do you interpret Baal? What? Give me an example of Baal Tosef. What would you think it is?
We said sitting in the sukkah for an extra day.
What?
Sitting
that would be your first thing that comes to mind based on the pasuk that we just read. Okay. Don't sit in the sukkah an extra day.
Not to add chumras. Not to make a
chumras. Okay. This is not talking.
We'd like it to say.
That's not what the Baal Tosef means. Okay. But so give me. Okay,
if I say give a half a shekel, and I want to give a whole shekel.
Okay, that's, again, what do you think is the simple reading of the text? Good. That's the simple reading. Don't add another commandment. Moshe says, what I tell you to do, that's what you should observe. Ushmartem, the first pasuk read, et hachukim ve'et hamishpatim, asher anochi mitzaveh etchem hayom. Observe the statutes which I'm telling you. Don't add a statute, and don't subtract a statute. That would be the simple interpretation of the text. However, that's not what Rashi is going to say. In both cases, we're going to read Rashi's comments in both cases, and he gives an illustration. As you well know, Gemaras, and even many times Rashi, they give concrete illustrations. They don't give us the definition. We have to formulate the definition based on the concrete examples that are provided.
Well, the question is, what is alav? So, if you define the word alav, that would tell the difference between what she said and what I said. If alav is on it, meaning on the mitzvahs I give you, or on it, on...
To it.
Okay, to it. Right. It's a definition of that word.
Okay. That might be...
Can I take a little of an answer and add something else to it? Is that also true?
What?
Can I take the little of an answer and add something?
Okay, so now let's... Good. So let's take a look at how Rashi defines it. And he gives illustrations in both cases. So we're on page 3.
Here it is.
Lo tosifu, says Rashi in Va'et Hanan. Kigon, chamesh parshiyot v'tfilin, adding a fifth parsha in tfilin. Chameshes minim belulav, adding a rose in your igud, in your bundle. V'chamesh tzitziyot, and putting five tzitziyot on your garment. V'chein lo tigru'u. Don't put three parshiyot in the tefillin. Don't only take three minim. You'll take a lulav and etrog and hadassah, but no aravot. Don't put three tzitziyot on the garment. That's what Rashi says in Parshat Vo'et Chanan. Then he goes to in the next illustrations on page 4. Rashi uses some of those illustrations and then chooses something else. Lo tosef alav chamisha totafot b'tfilin, five parshiot in the tefillin. Chamisha minim belulav, and here instead of adding the tzitzis illustration, he says arba berachot beberchot kohanim. Instead of just giving Yivarechecha, your heir, and Yisa Hashem Panavelecha, the Kayin decides to add another bracha. That's also Baal Tosef. So Rashi does not give an illustration about adding a 614th mitzvah. That's not. Rashi does not add in his example, or furnish an example, of saying that there are only 612 mitzvot. No. So based on the two sets of illustrations which Rashi provides, give me Rashi's definition of Baal Tosef and Baal Tikra. Give me a definition. Don't mention any illustrations. Give me the definition.
It's adding two limits,
though. And
they're
already existing.
Okay. So here you would... I'm going to give you an illustration of your... thing and see if Rashi would include it. The Torah says you're supposed to eat matzah. Okay? How much matzah are you supposed to eat? One kezayis. Okay. I'm going to say you have to eat two kezayisim. Would Rashi include that?
You could eat it, but you don't have
so
it.
So it
shouldn't
be required.
In all his examples, he specifies something with a number.
Ah! Rashi is not only limiting it to the an addition on the existing mitzvah, he's saying it's limited to a mitzvah that has a prescribed number in the Torah. Has a prescribed number.
The Torah is not a number, you're saying?
What?
No, it is a number.
It's not a number. The Torah...
Yeah.
No, but right. Kezayin is a number, it's a quantity. So where the Torah explicitly establishes the number with which you perform that mitzvah, then there is a possibility of Baal Tosef or Baal Tigra. But a mitzvah that does not have a defined number, under those circumstances, that is not included in the prohibition of Baal Tigra. and it has to be the number has to be part of the biblical definition of the mitzvah. So I'll give you an illustration. The mitzvah of prayer, according to Rambam, is a biblical commandment. The rabbis have structured that prayer as 18 brachot. Now 19. Okay, so Rambam Gamliel added the 19. You and I want to add another bracha. I want to make number 20. 20. Am I going to violate Baal Tosef?
No.
Not according to Rashi. Because by definition, tefillah is not a mitzvah that is framed by the Torah with a number in mind. So it's a limited number of examples. Now I want to go to Linda's case, and I want to further limit it to some extent, at least based on the first Rashi. Linda mentioned the example, because we once mentioned it, and she remembers, which is good, that somebody who eats or sleeps in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeres. So I happen to mention to you that the Gemara, we'll see it tonight, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says that you get Malkus in Eretz Yisrael if you eat or sleep. Not actually, it doesn't say if you eat. Only if you sleep in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeres. Hayashen b'shmini loke. Now, just because the Gemara says it, that doesn't mean that happens to be the halacha, because there are lots of things in the Gemara that were not accepted by halacha. Tell me, according to Rashi, would that illustration fit the definition, or do we have to refine it a little further? A little further.
It should, because it says basukot shushu
ba'yamei. Good. So that's good. Now I'm going to ask you to say no, it will not be included.
Because of the fact that it's not a number of items, it's a number of days.
Say it, okay. So
it's time.
Give me a part of a definition. A definition. Don't give me examples. Give me another clause to the definition that will not include Linda's case.
This would be tangible items.
Oh, good. It's got to be an item which has a number. It's the lulav. That's an item. It's the tefillin. It's the tzitzis. And what happens when you add something to this number? What do you destroy about that mitzvah? What do you destroy about... Not only will you violate the lav... But what else will you not do? You're not being mekayim the mitzvah. Because you've destroyed the object for the mitzvah.
Okay, now we have a problem. Because
what about the
Arkan? Okay, I said I want to start with the Rashi in Vayet Hanan. That's why I'm starting with those. So, therefore, here will be the difference between your case and these cases. If I eat and sleep in the sukkah for 7 days, then I sleep in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeret. Even if you want to say that I violate the prohibition, does that mean that I nullified my mitzvah for 7 days?
No.
Of course not. That's ludicrous. But here, if I put a fifth parsha in the tefillin, or I put a rosebud in my igud, in my bundle of... I don't fulfill a mitzvah. In addition to violating the lav, I am not going to fulfill the mitzvah. So I could have, via the illustrations which Rashi gives, I could have said, there is one additional clause. Not only do you have to add or detract from a mitzvah that has a defined number in the Torah, but it has to be something which, if added, invalidates the entire article of the mitzvah. I would have included that as part of the definition based on Parshat Va'et Hanan. Because he only gives the three illustrations of lulav, tzitzis, and tefillin. So those three, we can see, if you changed the requirements and added or subtracted, you don't have the article, what we call in the yeshiva-based medrash, the cheftza shel mitzvah, the article of the mitzvah, you tampered with it. I could have said that's part of the definition. It could very well be that the reason why Rashi in Parshat Re'eh substituted Birchat Kohanim is because he wants to let you know that I, Rashi, do not want to include that as part of the definition. Because in Birchat Kohanim, I can't imagine that if the Kohen recited those three brachot and then added a fourth bracha, that it disqualifies that which he did. Why would it be invalid? Why would he invalidate? Just because he added a fourth bracha means the first three, Yivarechecha and Yair, are worthless? That makes no sense. But it is an addition to that which is prescribed in the text. Because the Pasuk says, Ko tivarchu et b'nei Yisrael amor lohem. This is the exact text that I am prescribing. Yivarechecha, Yair, Yisa Hashem panaveilecha. So if not for Rashi's addition and change to Birchat Kohanim, I would have been guided by the first Rashi and stipulated that it's only in a situation. Not only do I require a mitzvah for which there is a well-defined number, it would have been a well-defined number that tampers with the very article of the mitzvah. But I can't include that in my definition because of the example of Birchat Kohanim. But adding mitzvah number 697 has no relevance to the lav of Baal Tosif whatsoever. None. If I come up and say there's a new mitzvah that on Memorial Day you have to eat barbecue. You have to have a barbecue. It's a mitzvah. That's not Baal Tosif. Not Baal Tosif. So it's a very limited application of the prohibition of Baal Tosif. Yes.
Could we possibly see it in the language? I don't know if this is right or not. But in the first place it says Al Hadavar. In the second place it says Allah, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Allah, I believe that's meaning that on it.
Mm-hmm.
Al Hadavar is on the matter.
On the item.
On the. Well.
Yeah, no. So what do you think the simple pshat of the pasuk of Al Hadavar, what do you think that means? What is the subject of the word Davar? What item is he talking about?
The mitzvah.
All of the mitzvot? A particular mitzvah? What is the simple reading of the pasuk? It says, Ushmartem et achukim v'et hamishpatim asher anochi milamed etchem lo tosifu al hadavar. What is the davar? What's the davar? The chukim and the mishpatim. That's the simple. The chukim and the mishpatim that I told you about. Don't add. So the simple reading of the text is don't add a 614th mitzvah. Because the word davar means in the context of the pshat, the chukim v'hamishpatim. Those, that's my frame of reference. And do not be mosif al hachukim v'al hamishpatim. Rashi says, it doesn't mean chukim u'mishpatim in general. What does it mean? The specific details about some of the chukim and the mishpatim. What specific detail? The fixed number. Kacha lomeid Rashi.
To me it seems that the same as adding a day to sit in the sukkah. It's a unit of some kind. And the Torah tells you that there are three brachos in Birchat Kohanim.
So she said there's a unit also. Basukot teshvu shivat yamim.
Yeah, but these are
This is a unit of time. This is a unit of bracha. But neither one is something you can pick up.
That the takes place at it, when the bracha is taking place. It's taking place at one instance. I mean, of course, you don't utter all the words
right
at once, but they're okay. It's happening at the same time. And it's like this kol ha-mosif goreya, you know, that by adding a fourth bracha that Hashem didn't include in his text, you may be undoing something.
Okay, I hear it. Good. That's Rashi's opinion. Now, let's move on and see one or two applications of this, and then I'll share with you the Ramban's perspective. And the Rambam's perspective. So, first, two sources that that limit this. So, the Mishnah on page 5, this is a Gemara in Sukkah, Daf Lamed Vav Amud Bet. The Mishnah says, Ein ogdin etalulav ela bemino. You are only permitted to tie the lulav, the hadas, and the arava together with something of the three meaning. You can take a sheet, a slit of the lulav, or a hadas branch, or an arava branch, and tie it together. But you can't take any other item and tie the lulav and the hadasim to the hadasim and the aravas to the lulav. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Meir Omer, afilu bechut b'mishicha, even with rope or thread, makes no difference how you tie the lulav and the hadasim the aravos. Omar Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Meir is going to bring a proof that he is correct. Ma'aseh ba'anshe Yerushalayim shehayu ogdin es lulaveyen begimonios shel zahav. The practice was of the people of Yerushalayim who tied their hadasim and the aravos to the lulav with bands of gold. Well, gold is not one of the three meaning. It's gold. And that's what they did. So I must be right. It's not absolutely required that you limit it to the three meaning. Amru lo, so the rabbis responded to Rabbi Meir, you didn't look at it carefully enough. Bimino hayu ogdin oso milamata. Underneath the gold band was what? A piece of hadas or arava.
It was just a decorative.
It was just a decorative piece, but not designed to fulfill the mitzvah. Now, the Gemara goes on to say that the debate between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir hinges upon a different machloikus. What does it depend on? Do the minim, do the hadas and the harava have to be tied to the lulav or not? The words are lulav tzorich agad, le'agod is to tie together. Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that lulav tzorich igud. You must tie the lulav, the hadas and the harava together. Rabbi Meir says, lulav ain't sarich agad. Lulav does not need to be tied together. Ah, yes. According to Rambam and the Baal, you can take them separately. So now, let's read into this machloikis. If you hold that lulav sarich agad, the hadasim and the aravos must be tied together into the lulav, that means there is a well-defined article of a mitzvah. So how must you tie those three meaning together? How must you tie? With either one of the lulav, you rip off a lulav branch, or you live, you take another hadas, you're an arava. But if I'm going to take anything else, that's baltosif. Because I'm adding something into the article of the mitzvah.
Even if it was on top of what he had, he's still doing
baltosif.
Look at that gold thing.
Oh, no, that's so the Gemara later says. No, I don't want to go into that now. The Gemara later says because it's done for beautification purposes, it's not an issue. That's the Gemara says that later. But let's look at Rabbi Meir's opinion. Rabbi Meir says you can tie it with anything. Because I do not believe that you have to tie them together in the first place. And as Nechama pointed out, it doesn't only mean that you can take them loosely, and you have to take them one, you don't have to take them at the same time. In fact, the Rambam exaggerates. It's 9 o'clock in the morning, and you pick up the lulav. It's 10 o'clock in the morning, you pick up the hadas. At 11 o'clock in the morning, you pick up the aravos. At 12 o'clock in the afternoon, you pick up the esrog.
When do you say the bracha for all of this?
When you do the first action. At 9 o'clock in the morning.
I mean, I'll see that lulav and you could be picking up the esrog.
Correct. That's the way we do. The Gemara asked the question, why is the bracha al matilas lulav? It's not my discussion tonight.
So, say bracha
it's funny. That's a little funny. But you would be able to do that.
How do you do Nanuim?
There's no mitzvah of Nanuim on a biblical level. If you want to do the Nanuim, you have to hold them together. But the mitzvah is defined very simply. Ulikachtem. You take it, pick it up for a second, yoyotze the mitzvah. The Gemara's expression in the Aramaic is midagbe, lahagbiya is to pick it up, nafakbe, yoyotze the mitzvah as soon as you pick it up. Maridas, the Torah never heard of Nanuin. So hold on just 1 second. So now, what happens according to our definitions? This fits in nicely with our definition. You need an article of a mitzvah in order to add to it. So if you hold that you have to tie the hadasim and the aravos together, there is an article of a mitzvah. This is the article. Can't be anything else in it. So if you tie them with anything else, says Rabbi Yehuda, you'll violate Baltosif. And probably you will not even get credit for the mitzvah. Rabbi Meir says, Lulav ein tzorich agad. Lulav does not have to be tied together, and you can take them separately. So if you can take your lulav at 9 and your esrog at 12, you can't say that there is a well-defined cheftza shel mitzvah, an article of mitzvah. You never see all four of them at the same time even. Hence, the concept of baltosif, according to Rabbi Meir, has no application. So you can tie it with whatever you please. You can tie it with the arba minim, plus you can tie it with whatever you want. Does anybody happen to remember what our practice is in this regard? What's our practice? So good. So before they invented this little thing to which you insert the hadasim and the aravos, what did they used to do? Just take a strip of something. And, most of the time they take an arava branch, because after we put the thing into those holders, what we call them, we tie the holder together, it's with an arava branch. That's what we do. We're machmir, like, even though halach is against Rabbi Yehuda. But if we can make him happy, why not? That's the Mishnah teaches also somebody. If you can make everybody happy, make them happy. Rabbi Meir doesn't care if you do it this way. He doesn't say, you have to bedafka follow me. Our practice is to follow Rabbi Yehuda even though the halach is against him. Lulav does not necessarily have to be tied together. We paskin like the Chachamim, lulav ain't tzorech agad, but it's nice to do so because of Hidur Mitzvah. better to look like you have an article of mitzvah, not do it over 4 different hours. Fine. So this Gemara would fit in very nicely into our definition. Yes?
Okay, so if you could pick up 1 at 9 and 1 at 10 and 1 at 11 and 1 at 12, then why can't I pick up a rose at 1?
Who said you can't? According, that's what the Gemara is saying.
And that would not have invalidated anything.
Absolutely not.
No, it has nothing to do with it.
There's nothing to do. It's got nothing to do with it. Okay. Even if it's not at 1, if I do it at 9:30, I can pick up a rose. There's no connection whatsoever. Because there is no well-defined article. What?
Rashi doesn't have a problem with that?
No.
You can't take 5. You can only take 4.
Okay, so our Gemara is defining for us what must be running through Rashi's mind. When would Rashi say you violate Baal Tosef by Lulav? If you are of the opinion Lulav Tzarech Agad. But if you don't paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, Rashi would have to look for a different example. That would not be included in Rashi's examples. That would be a wrong example according to Rashi. That's why I'm showing you the Gemara.
By the time Rashi came around, was it settled? That
yeah. No, it wasn't.
It wasn't settled yet.
No. No. In some, yes, it was settled. Rashi is taking a preference. He has a right to paskin lulav tzarech agad. That's his prerogative.
Okay.
Yeah. Good. That's that illustration. Go to page number 5. No, that was 4. Oh, no, there was 2 5s. There are 2 5s. Okay.
Which is the 5?
Right side?
Good. So here, there are 2 things that I want to show you. I'm going to start with the second bracketed illustration. Second bracketed on this page. Disnan, we learned in a Mishnah. Here's the halacha upon which this Mishnah is based. We know that every single korban, the essential element of a korban is the zrikas hadam, is the sprinkling of its blood on the mizbeach. That's the most essential part of a korban. That is what generates and grants you kapara if you're doing so for the purpose of seeking atonement. It's the zrikas hadam. No kohen is allowed to eat any meat of the korban until the zrikas hadam. So there are certain korbanot that can only be consumed by the kohanim male. That's the korban chatas, korban mincha, korban asham. And if it's a korban shlamim, where not only the male kohanim can eat, but every member of Am Yisrael, man, woman, and child can eat, we are not allowed to eat the meat until after the zrikas hadam. Till after the zrikat hadam. Fine. Now, each korban has its defined number of zrikot. They're not all the same. Some korbanot have to be sprinkled twice, which wind up on 4 walls. The Mizbeach has 4 walls. It's a perfect square. Ravua yihye. So how do I sprinkle something only twice and get it on all 4 walls? I sprinkle a corner. I sprinkle the blood at corner number 1 and it goes to 2 sides. I go to the opposite side of the Mizbeach and I sprinkle on that corner. It spreads to the 2 sides. So that's called Shtayim Shehein Arba. Shtayim Shehein Arba. Sometimes they need all 4 walls sprinkled independently. You need arba matanot. Sometimes only 1 matana is required. Sometimes the sprinkling has to be on the top half of the mizbeach. Some of them have to be on the bottom half of the Mizbeach. And just as an aside, I once told the Chumash class, Abarbanel asks the question, should I start racking my brains to figure out the logic why this korban is sprinkled four times, this one is twice but on four walls, this one is once, this one's on the top level, bottom level, should I waste my brains trying to figure it out? And Abarbanel says, don't waste your time. There's no logic for it. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu make all these things? Just so that we follow rules. Because if you don't follow a rule with korbanot, it's avodah zarah. Because everything that we do in the Beit HaMikdash, they had in some pagan worship. So how do you distinguish pagan worship from a korban? Just follow the details of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Fine. So here's the Mishnah going to describe a tumultuous situation in the Mikdash. You got lots of people bringing korbanot. They believe it's Yom Tov time. A couple of million people are in the Beit HaMikdash. Oh, this guy's bringing this korban. He's got this. Because you don't come to the Beit HaMikdash. There was no train going from the airport to Yerushalayim at that time. Soon it's going to go to Tel Aviv, 27 minutes, and that's it. It took a while, so you didn't come to the Mikdash very frequently. If you were lucky, you made it for Shalosh Regalim, says the Mishnah. Hanitonin b'matona achas. Shinit arvu b'nitonin matona achas. If korban number one, which requires only one application on the Mizbeach, got mixed up with the blood of another korban that also only requires one.
Is Rika called the Matana?
Yeah, Matana is to apply it. Rika. Yes. Yinatnu Matana Achas. So what do you do with this blood? Just sprinkle it once. And now it's no problem. Because both korbanot only require once. You can see where we're going to be headed. Matan Arba. The Matan Arba, if a korban that requires four sprinklings got mixed up with another one that required four sprinklings, what do you do? Yinatnu b'matan arba. So you sprinkle four times. Can't go wrong. Now comes the problem. Matan arba b'matan achas. A korban that required four applications of blood got mixed up with another korban that only required one. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, yinatnu b'matan arba. You should sprinkle four times. Don't look any further. Tell me why he would say that. Why, if a one is mixed up with a four, should you sprinkle four times? Tell me why.
Because
you cover everything. If it requires one, okay, you sprinkled once. It requires four, you do four times. Good.
It's no
Baltosif. That's what the Gemara is going to ask. Hold on a second.
The Matana that was just one, you're doing Baltosif now.
That's what you just asked. So hold on. That's before the Gemara introduces Baltosif. I just asked you for your logic. And you said correctly. Because you cover both korbanot. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, yinatnu v'matan achas. Rabbi Yeshua says, if a one gets mixed up with a four, you only sprinkle the blood once. Once. Amalo Rabbi Eliezer. So Rabbi Eliezer said to him, harehu over al bal tigra. If you're only going to do once, what have you done to what? To the korban that requires four times. You've reduced the number. And you violate the law of Baal Tigra. Plus, what other thing will you... What will happen to that korban? It's going to be a disqualified korban. Why? Because it didn't require the requisite number of sprinklings. Fine. Amaloi Rabbi Yeshua, harehu over al Baltosif. The other way. Look at it from the vantage point of what? of the korban that requires only one. And now you're sprinkling blood four times. So you're going to violate the prohibition of Baal Tosef.
Which is worse.
So they're going to debate that. That's exactly what they're going to debate. Amar lo Rabbi Eliezer. Lo ne'emar Baal Tosef. Elo kishehu be'atzmo. You know when the prohibition of Baal Tosef applies? Only when the one korban blood is alone. So how many does it require? One application. So if I take a single korban's blood, which requires one sprinkling, and now I sprinkled it four times, then I'm going to violate Baal Tosef. But if it's mixed in with another blood of a korban that requires four times, you don't have to worry about Baal Tosef.
Really?
That's what the Gemara says. Right now, this part of the argument. That's why I say, how many should be sprinkled? Four of them. Amalo Rabbi Yeshua. Lo ne'emar bal tigra ela kishehu la'atzmo. You know what? You know when there is a problem of taking a korban of four and only doing one? When it's alone. When it's the only blood of a korban that I have. It requires four sprinklings, and I don't have four sprinklings. I only have one. But when it's a four mixed up with a one, and it's not be'atzmo alone, then that's not a violation of Baal Tigra. You can reduce it under those circumstances.
So even one that requires four is okay if it has one under those circumstances?
Yes. No, I didn't say anything that the four is kosher. The four is not going to be kosher under those circumstances, but I will not violate the prohibition of Baal Tosef, even though it was a four and it only got one. I will not. Baal Tigra, right. Now Rabbi Yeshua says, I'm going to tell you why I am right. The Odomer Rabbi Yeshua. Kishilo nasata, when you don't sprinkle more than one, in a situation where it's a one and a four mixed in, avarta al Baal Tigra velo asita ma'ase biyadecha. You did not violate it actively. How did you violate Baal Tigra? Passively. Passively. What did you do? You only sprinkled once. So how did you violate Baal Tigra for the korban that requires four applications? By not sprinkling it. That's called passive. Shave the Al Ta'aseh. That's a passive violation.
Isn't Baal Tigra always passive? What's an example of how Baal Tigra would be active?
That's what he's saying, by definition.
It always is.
But your suggestion, Mr. Eliezer, it's what are you saying? When you have a one and a four, what do? You violate four. You sprinkle four. So from the vantage point of the one, what did you violate? Baal Tosef. And how did you violate Baal Tosef? Actively. By doing an action to sprinkle the blood four times. Says Rabbi Yoshua, if I have a choice to violate, I'm going to have to violate a biblical law one way or the other. If I have a choice to violate a law in a passive fashion, I would prefer that than violating a law in an active fashion. In an active fashion. Shave v'al ta'aseh is always adif. Always better. Always better than to violate something actively. I'll give you one of the famous illustrations of this. Famous illustrations. Yeah. There is a halacha, I mentioned this on I spoke about the Uggs on Shabbos. Fine. So, the prohibition of Shatnez is overridden for the mitzvah of tzitzis. So if I have a linen garment, tzitzis have to be wool, According to Torah law, I am obligated to wear tzitzis and violate the prohibition of shatnez. What's that rule known as? What's that rule? Aseh doche lo ta'aseh. Whenever there is a conflict between a positive commandment and a negative commandment, the rule of Pinky is the positive always overrides the negative. Always overrides the negative. But the rabbis say, do not wear tzitzis with shatnez. Do not. Because if you are going home and you are on the A train and between 59th Street and 125th Street, there are no stops on the A train. But when there's rush hour, a lot of traffic, it takes a half hour to do that one stop. When it's flying, it takes 5 minutes. But when it's not flying, it takes an hour. So I get out of work at 5 o'clock. Shkia Sachama today was 5:48. It's now 5:48. I'm squashed like a sardine in the A train. Exactly. It's now nighttime. No mitzvah of tzitzis. No mitzvah of tzitzis. That's why I said it's an A train, squashed like sardines. Nope, I can't even take it off. So what did the rabbi say? It's better not to wear tzitzis all day than to wear tzitzis at night and violate a lav with an action. I'm wearing the tzitzis. How will I avoid this? By not wearing tzitzis at all. That's shev for altasa. That's not doing anything. It's always better when you have a dilemma, and here Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua have a dilemma, to violate something in a negative fashion as opposed to violating it in an active, positive fashion. That was the argument which Rabbi Yehoshua made. But what's happening here? What's happening here? We have the bloods mixed up. Does this illustration fit the examples that we have given or the definition that we have used up until now? Does it fit the definition?
No.
Why not?
It's not tangible.
There's no. No, there is. One time. Four times. The Torah says sprinkle it once.
Time is not an object.
No, it's the time, the frequency. That's okay. So hold on. On a regular, let's assume it's not mixed up. Not mixed up. So I have a korban that only requires one sprinkling, and I sprinkle twice. Not mixed up with anything else. Will I violate Baal Tosef? Answer is yes. It has a fixed number. The article is defined, one little splattering of blood, and I decided to sprinkle it twice. Or, if it requires four times, four sprinklings, and I only did three, I tampered with the existing number of this korban. So it fits in beautifully. Beautifully. The only debate is between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua, which is preferred to violate when I have a mixture? Should I violate Baal Tosef or should I violate Baal Tikva? So Rabbi Yehoshua already explained why he preferred Baal Tikva. Why did he prefer Baal Tikva? Because it's a passive violation, not an active. But why does Rabbi Eliezer prefer Baal Tosef? He said, when it's mixed up, what do? You sprinkle it four times. Tell me why. Why do you think he says, what advantage does he have, even though he knows very well that it's an active violation, what did he accomplish by doing this? Yes.
He accomplished the
mitzvah. Of what? Of which korban?
Of both.
Exactly. In the case of Rabbi Yehoshua, the korban that required four is definitely pasul, because it only got one. So you weren't mekayim the mitzvah. says Rabbi Eliezer to Rabbi Yeshua, it's very nice that you want to violate something only passively. I hear that. But mine, violating active, has another advantage. That at least I will have fulfilled the obligations of both korbanot. I will violate Baal Tosef. I grant you that. But the side benefit is that I will have fulfilled the mitzvah. In that respect, the case of the bloods is not exactly like the tefillin and the tzitzis, where you undoubtedly disqualify the fulfillment of mitzvah. It's more analogous to the case of sleeping in the sukkah on the eighth day. The Torah has a number, Basukot Teshvu. If you sleep on that eighth day, you will violate Baal Tosef. But it's not going to invalidate the fact that I performed the first seven days, Kedat Ukedin. And if you now go to the first bracketed page, the first bracketed line on page 5, the second number 5 that we're just looking at, Amalei Abaye Elameyata Hayoshein Bishmini Bisukka Yilaka. Somebody who sleeps in the sukkah during Sukkot will get lashes. What's he going to get lashes for? For violating Baal Tosef. For violating Baal Tosef. Now, it's only if you sleep in the sukkah. What happens if you eat in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeres in Israel? Why shouldn't you violate the law of Baal Tosef? Says the Gemara, because sometimes sukkato areva alav. You love sitting in the sukkah. Because inside it's so hot.
Yeah, people could sit there after sukkah is over, right?
Of course, but not on Shmini Atzeres.
Yeah, no, but that's what we were told about the garbage can thing. Well, we discussed this one other time. On Shmini Atzeres, if you want to eat a sukkah, you put a garbage can into your sukkah. Because disqualifies it.
Correct. So that's correct. If you put something in, it doesn't have to be a garbage can. It can be your dish, your pots. There are a lot of things that you can do. A lot of do a sukkah. Right. But the point is, without doing that, eating is no problem. But sleeping, people didn't sleep in the sukkah unless there was a mitzvah to do so. Otherwise you'd sleep out there a whole summer. And people don't do that, even if it's hot inside. Eating is another matter. So that fits in very well. That's why it's discussed on the same page of the Gemara. Because it fits in. There are two similar illustrations. There is a number, but the violation of the Baal Tosef does not invalidate the fulfillment of your mitzvah. You fulfilled it for 7 days. You fulfilled the mitzvah of the one sprinkling of blood. But you violated Baal Tosef because it didn't need one. It didn't need four. It only needed one. But it doesn't invalidate the one. So here we have illustrations of violating Baal Tosef and Baal Tigra without necessarily invalidating the Kiyum HaMitzvah. That is not the case in the examples which Rashi gave, with the exception of Birchat Kohanim. All of the other illustrations, not only do you violate Baal Tigra or Baal Tosef, but you didn't get credit for the mitzvah. Yeah.
This isn't usually the way we all learned it, though, about adding and subtracting by the numbers. We didn't really learn it this way, that it's not because of numbers. It's always about adding new mitzvah.
Okay,
adding...
but I'm focusing.
No, I know you're
focusing on Rashi. Of course not. Okay. When you were 10 years old, they taught you in Peoria.
Aurora, excuse me.
In Aurora.
She's Peoria.
Okay. In Aurora, that's how they taught you.
Yeah.
That Baal Tosef is, don't make up mitzvah number 614. That is the Ramban's contribution. It's called Badu Chachamim Mitzvah Meliban. The rabbis made up a new mitzvah. That's the Ramban. Rashi never heard of that. Never heard of that. But we're not going to do the Ramban yet tonight. Because I want to first do the Ramban. Then I'll do the Ramban. What?
This is really small.
Yeah, I know. Says the Rambam, Ho'il v'yesh lebeit din ligzor v'le'esor davar hamutar, since Beit Din has the right to decree and to prohibit something that according to Torah law is permissible, v'ya'amod isuro l'dorot, and this prohibition will last forever. Give me an illustration.
Say it again.
The Chachamim have a right to take something which the Torah permits, and the rabbis say it is now prohibited, and that prohibition will last for time immemorial.
There's so many.
Okay, so I'm going to take one of the Rambam's give. Oh, that's not doing something. Okay, yes.
Something they're prohibiting.
Okay, I want to give something a little more concrete. So the Rambam takes chicken and milk. Okay, according to Torah law, chicken can be cooked together with milk. It's only meat that is prohibited. Chicken is only a gzera. No time in the foreseeable future are we going to be able to eat chicken and milk together. Doesn't look like it. Fine. Or v'chein yesh lohen lahatir isurei Torah lefi sha'ah, there are times when the rabbis have a right to suspend Torah law. Suspend Torah law. But only temporarily. Lefi sha'ah. Lefi sha'ah. Can you give me an example where a temporary suspension of Torah law took place? Can you give me an illustration? That's the perfect example. Eliyahu offering a sacrifice on Har HaKarmel. You're not outside of the Mikdash. You're not allowed to offer a sacrifice outside of the Mikdash. So why did he do it? Because he wanted to make a point to the Nevi Habal. So he did not make a public announcement and say, the prohibition of what's called Shchutei Chutz, slaughtering a korban outside of the Mikdash, is suspended. He said it's suspended now, in this case. That's it.
Wasn't the Rebbeinu that decided that?
What?
That was the Navi on his own.
That was the Navi? He decided it. That was it. But the Rambam is talking about any time that they make such a thing. So he asks, if they have such an ability, Mahu ze shehesira Torah lo tosif alav velo tigram imenu. If the rabbis are allowed to add chicken and milk, what did the Torah have in mind? Thou shalt not add. If the rabbis have a right to suspend the biblical prohibition of slaughtering the korban out of the Mikdash, how do you understand lo tigram imenu? So, just one second. What definitely does Rambam reject about Baal Tosef and Baal Tikra simply based on his question? That the number thing is immaterial. If the Rambam believed, as Rashi did, that the prohibition of Baal Tikra and Baal Tosef is limited only to what? To a situation numbers, his question is a stupid question. But he knows it's much broader than that. So how is it that the rabbis were able to make an announcement? A chicken cheese sandwich is prohibited. That should be Baal Tosef. That should be Baal Tosef.
They didn't actually create a new thing. They just expanded on something.
So he's going to give the answer. But his question is, Shelo lahosif al divrei Torah v'lo ligroa mehen. So what is he? What do you? I don't have time to read the whole thing. What do you think he's going to answer? What do you think his answer is?
It's a
What do you think would be the difference?
It's not
Torah Shebal Peh. Torah Shebal Peh is explaining the text. Say it what it's not. What are they not saying when they told us no chicken?
They're not creating a new thing.
They are not saying that what?
That it's Doraita.
They acknowledge that the Torah law is what? Only
meat.
They acknowledge that.
They're still adding.
But they're adding a gzeira midrabanan as a protection for the Doraita mitzvah. Because if you're going to eat chicken and if you're going to cook chicken and milk, you'll cook meat. Because today people call meat chicken. Everybody does that. You expect meat at a meal, and you often get a chicken dinner. Happens all the time.
People still know the difference between.
I didn't say they don't know the difference, but if a meat meal is called for, you will get chicken on a Friday night. You'll have chicken served. At a wedding, you'll have chicken served, even though it's a sudat mitzvah. You will. So as long as the rabbis acknowledge, says the Rambam later on, that this is a din derabanan, then it's not bal tosif. But if they were to say, we believe that this is now prohibited according to Torah law, that is bal tosif.
So can I do that too? As long as I say I'm adding this, but I'm not adding, I understand it's not deraisa, I'm adding it.
Be my guest. You want to be? You have a right to be machmir upon yourself and not eat anything. You're right.
That's what I'm saying. I'm making new rules.
For yourself or for me?
For myself.
That's perfectly okay. You don't want to eat meat? Go ahead, be a veggie. What do I care? Who cares?
That doesn't have to do with the halacha, whether I...
Well, what else is it? What else? What are you doing? You're saying, I'm not going to eat any meat. Give me another illustration where you're accepting a chumrah upon yourself.
Nazir.
Nazir is in the Torah.
No, that's... Me.
Give me... So you're a vegetarian. What?
Shabbos for being a time.
Okay, that's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch. The mechat, most Rishonim only knew of the Rabbeinu Tam. They never heard of the Gaon. So they all, the Shulchan Aruch says that the Shabbos is the Rabbeinu Tam. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says. So if you want to, even though we know that the Gaon is right, you want to be machmer, fine. You got the that's a chumra you accept upon yourself. It's not about Tosef.
So I want to add even more shofar blows because I think there's some other.
Okay, good. So Tosfos, we're going to get to that. Tosfos and Rosh Hashanah asked the question. How did we suddenly come to 100 sounds when the halacha only demands 30? Isn't that bal tosif? So we're going to learn that tosif. Not tonight. We're just starting the sugya tonight. So according to Rambam, he vehemently disagrees with Rashi and claims that adding even a detail to a mitzvah, a detail, if I were to say, that's not fabricating number mitzvah 614, according to the Rambam. It's a mitzvah number 280. You're not allowed to eat meat and milk. But what's he doing? Expanding the category of meat to include chicken? According to the Rambam, that's also bal tosif.
No, but as far as the shofar goes, why can I say it's okay? Because I'm saying I know 30 are deraisa, but I'm doing these extra not deraisa.
Instead, I'm going to read the tosfos. Tosfos will say, just because you should be able to sleep tonight, Tosfos will say, repeating a mitzvah the way it's supposed to done, a second time and a tenth time, the same mitzvah is not bal tosif. That's Tosfos' answer. As it didn't fundamentally change the mitzvah, I repeated a mitzvah. That's going to be Tosfos. We'll talk about it. I'm going to show you that Tosfos.
Just individually decide.
What's that?
We can't just individually decide to take one of those type of mitzvahs and do it more.
You can do whatever you want.
No, personally.
Personally.
You can't, like in Shul, just add to how many times we go.
Well, not if you're going
like, if you decided
we did.
You wanted to, no, but now you want to add more.
I want to add more than 100 sounds?
Yeah.
I don't know. I they'll probably kick me out of the RCBC, but
you won't be alone.
But There's no, I can't see if there's an isur to do it, you know.
So really? According to the Rambam, it's usur to add or expand if you say it's the oraisa.
Correct.
Only if you say
it's the oraisa. But that's why he begins this whole lengthy instruction. We know that the rabbis add prohibitions to Torah law. But they acknowledge it's a din derabanan as a siyug. As a siyug. So the Ravid's going to object to the Rambam and says that also might be about Tosif because we find protections which are the Oraisa. The concept of a siyug as a protective barrier it's not created by the rabbis, it's in the Torah itself. Where did we find
Har Sinai?
Before Har Sinai. Way before Har Sinai. What did little Nachash do?
Don't touch it.
Don't touch it. Who decided to add don't touch? Adam and Chava decided, don't touch it. Why? Exactly. That's the concept there. Or some say, why are you not allowed to have chametz in your house on Pesach? Why not? Because if it's there, you're going to eat it. You eat chametz all year, so that is an illustration of a biblical siyug. So the Ravid's going to disagree the Rambam. Says, what are you talking about? If it's a siyug, it can't be Baal Taisif? It can't be a Doraisif? Of course it could be. But I don't want to focus on the Ravid yet. I want to show you the Rambam. The Rambam has a different definition. It doesn't require a definitive number, but it does require something linked to an existing mitzvah. But what do I do with that existing mitzvah? What do I do? I enhance it if I claim it's the oraisa. So if I say muktzah is a oraisa, then it's linked to a mitzvah of the Torah, Shmirah Shabbos. And one of the mitzvos of one of the aspects of the 39 malachos is not to turn on electricity or something with a back. So I'm going to say it. This is also a doraisa. But I didn't make up mitzvah number 614. I expanded upon mitzvah number 602 or mitzvah 207. That also is Baal Taisif. So we have two definitions thus far. Rambam limited in Rashi limited in number to an existing mitzvah that has a number, so it's a very narrow field of mitzvot to which you can apply Baal Tosef and Baal Tigra. Rambam a little more expanded field; it can apply to any mitzvah of the Torah where you add or detract an existing law of those 613. But the Rambam no one has yet said, I told you who it is, the Rambam, that adding mitzvah number 614 is also included in the mitzvah. And as you said, if you ask any kid on the street, what it'll tell you, yeah, of course, don't ask any adult. They'll say, yeah, it means you can't add mitzvah number 14. And you'll tell them you're wrong, according to Rashi and the Rambam. We'll stop here, and we will not have